CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, folks. Back on Monday morning for another episode of Cliff Central. How's it going, gentlemen?
Good morning, George.
How are you?
How's it, George?
Good. How's your weekend?
Nice and busy, actually.
Nice and busy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yours?
Nice and relaxed for me.
Nice and relaxed. Well, in studio with me, I've got, obviously, myself, George Mini. And to my left is Wandi Lesishi.
In the flesh.
In the flesh. How's it, Wandi?
Good, good.
Good. Mr. Laidback himself.
So they say.
And we have the Mr. Martin Pretorius.
How's it, George?
Good, and you?
Yeah.
Good, and then Lawrence Meany. Not spelt the same, but Lawrence Meany
nonetheless.
No relation. And you're listening to the Auto Central Show, where we bring you everything related to the automotive industry, market, and whatever crazy stuff we come up with. So I suppose let's get into what is the news. And in the news this morning, the first thing that I think is very interesting is that this Gauteng speedster that traveled 308 kilometers an hour on one of Gauteng's roads has now been nabbed.
What a chop.
But I think the worst part is that he was let free on R1,000 bail.
Yeah, that's a bit wild.
Yeah, that's just enough to get out of jail. He still has to go to court, and there's no way he's going to get off with whatever this is. He is going to get a massive fine or have his driver's license taken away when he eventually gets in front of a judge.
How does the bail system work then? Like, why is it R1,000 for this and, you know, lesser crimes get more?
You know what? One of the reasons I think the bail system exists is because the courts don't really want to put people in jail. They want people to appear for their day in court. So that's why the bail system exists, to stop the jails from getting overpopulated. And, you know, you're supposed to be innocent until you're proven guilty. And bail is set, I think part of the criteria is flight risk. Like, are you gonna just not appear in court?
Okay, makes sense. I mean, this guy's a driver, right? He's not a pilot, so.
What, hey, if I'm going to fly away?
Yeah, I know.
Well, this 36-year-old gentleman was doing 308 kilometers an hour on a main highway in Gauteng, going past Midrand, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the Road Traffic Management Corporation has arrested him. He was actually at a funeral when they found him.
But the thing is, if you follow the story, you'll see that they said, "We're going to find you." Then they came out and said, "We found you. You better come and hand yourself in."
Oh, and you didn't?
No.
And then they said, "Okay, well, we got you. We know where you are."
Yeah.
So, in all honesty, what an idiot.
Yeah.
If you're going to break the law, don't film yourself doing it.
Just don't break the law in the first place, I guess.
Not that I condone what he was doing. I'm just like, still, just don't film yourself doing stupid.
What vehicle was he in when he was
Audi TTS?
Audi TTS.
An Audi.
Yeah, Audi TTS. He was on the N1 southbound in Midrand, and you know, no doubt the speed limit there was 120 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, and he was going well in excess of that, and I think it's double, which I think is a 15,000 rand fine or 1 year in jail.
Just carry on counting.
And or he's going to have his license revoked.
Yeah. Can a TTS actually go that fast?
Yes.
Like, how did this...
With the appropriate software mods, yes.
Well, 308. You can see it on the dash there. He's doing 308.
That's incredible.
You know, in order to take a photograph like that as a driver, you have to be looking at the camera, because you've got to push the camera button. You're going to have to be looking at your dash. Mm. You, at that kind of speed, he's taking his eyes off the road.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. That is criminal stupidity.
That, I mean, he could have not only killed himself, he could have damaged property and other people. Mm. You know, he's going to have his day in court. Let's see and follow the story and see what happens. Now, the gentleman in 2019 that did 322 kilometers an hour, remember him?
Yep.
He hasn't been nabbed yet.
Nope.
I wonder, he was going on the R21 past Kempton Park. I wonder if the cops are any closer to catching him.
Probably not.
Yeah, I think that.
Well, you never know. I mean,
you know what I liked about this story as I was following it was, we have intensive investigating. That was their quote. We have intensive investigating people working on this. We're going to find you. I know exactly what they did.
They used the cameras in the gantries.
They phoned up their chummies over at eTolls and said, listen, such and such a time on that stretch of road, just give us a video playback of who was there.
Yeah.
That's how they found him.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
It wasn't any serious investigation. They just made a phone call.
But how come the
investigation
at 3:22 was not caught?
Because there's not that many gantries on the 21.
Plenty.
Maybe he didn't go under one. No, but I think if I remember watching the video, he did go under the gantry.
Mm-hmm.
So why
did he have plates?
Yeah.
More than likely.
Oh, who knows? Yes, it's a good point. Don't know.
Anyway, don't do it. It's stupid.
I wonder if you're sweating, Mr. 322 kilometer an hour. I wonder if he's sitting there thinking, oh, at some point these oaks are going to come and find me. Anyway, so you don't speed like that. It's just a public road. Other people are on it. You know, go on a racetrack. Mm-hmm. It's not funny. You're not a hero. You're not a hero if you do this.
If you really, really, really want to do it, you sign up to Race SA's Top End Runs. You go out to, what's that place in North Pretoria? ODI Raceway. And you can do a top end run in a safe, controlled...
As the BMW, M, and AMG.
Exactly. You want to feel what it feels like to go to 300 k's an hour?
Yeah. Go and sign up and do a couple of top end runs.
There was actually an event for cars of that nature yesterday.
There we go. Go and do a top end run. Don't do it on our highways. You're not a hero. As a matter of fact, you're going to end up getting caught like this gentleman.
Raising the ire of motoring enthusiasts like ourselves.
Yeah, you just make it harder for everyone else. Let's move on to another story. It's getting boring now. Anyway, Mini's potentially going to launch a car sharing service in South Africa. They're busy testing it at the moment, and they're sketchy around the details. Releasing the details of how it works yet, but they are testing it. Would you share your car?
Nope.
No, not my car. No.
No,
you wouldn't.
Not mine.
You wouldn't. So how do you think this car sharing service will work?
Most I'd likely. Have to see what their business plan is.
Yeah, but it's most likely going to be a subscription based service. And if you need a car, you dial it up on an app, and it'll tell you where the car is.
So you think the best way to run car sharing is not to own the car, for a central company to own the car, and then you just go and drive it.
Basically,
park five of them in Melrose Arch. You need a car ride home or something. Mm. You just dial in, walk up to the car, scan it.
Mm.
Unlocks the car. You get in, you drive.
And would you just be a mini?
I suppose the version I'm talking about is carpooling, no? Car sharing.
This is proper car sharing.
Yeah. You don't own the car.
No.
Would you give up your car to do this?
Me? No. Yes.
No.
I wouldn't give up my car, but I would definitely
if
sign
I wasn't
up to
as reliant on cars as I am. If I worked and lived in Sandton and you maybe wanted to once a month go and visit family somewhere, then it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like 90% of the population, you work here, you live over there.
See, here's the reality. For people who live typically, let's say Melrose, you mentioned Melrose just now, they might work very close to home as well.
Yeah.
And there is a reasonable public transport infrastructure. Yeah. So it doesn't make sense for them to actually own a car. And just it makes more sense to just rent one, essentially, as you need it.
No, for sure. I agree with that. But I don't know. You know, my sense is that South Africans, by and large, we're a car-owning nation.
Mm.
You know, is Uber doing as well as they did in the beginning? You know, I've read some stuff where it's slowing down a little bit. People aren't using it as much as they did in the beginning. I definitely don't use Uber as much anymore either. You know, and gone back to renting cars when I travel
because I just felt unsafe. All have Corolla Quests, and that's
no,
the worst.
The
car's
just for me. For me, the car's just started deteriorating, and I felt unsafe. And the leap to using an Uber Black was just too expensive. You might as well just hire a car.
Well, look, I used an Uber about 4 months ago, and it was a pretty late model Polo. Decent car, decent condition,
Joburg.
Good driver, Pretoria.
Pretoria. Now, there we go.
The reason why
about Cape Town and Durban.
The reason why I prefer to not use Uber is because they're so bloody expensive.
Well, it depends on the distance.
This was a 7 kilometer
and
trip,
time.
But it cost me about 80 rand.
80 rand, yeah.
From my house to the airport is all of 8.5 kilometers, and that's 125 bucks.
Oh, well, airport trips are more expensive, eh? Mm. Airport trips are more expensive. Anyway, so let's see whether this car sharing initiative of Mini goes and makes any changes to the outside of the test that they're doing. So I'd like us to try and follow what happens here. I hope that it works out, but my sense is that South Africa is a car owning country.
Well, you see, a number of tech companies that have.
Well, that was
what
me.
Was that?
One Who was that?
That was me.
So guilty as charged.
Now, see, just left thing. It as a gremlin.
Here's the thing about car sharing. Logically, it doesn't make sense to own a car anymore.
For yeah, the logic tells you one thing, reason. But South yeah. Africans are emotional.
Yeah, but you see, there's this thing. It costs you money even when it's standing there parked.
Yeah.
So you drive it to work. It stands at the office car park for the next 10 hours, and it costs you money all the time. And then you drive it home, and overnight it costs you money again without doing anything.
Yeah.
So if this car sharing thing can alleviate that downtime problem, it will make sense. But like I said, South Africa is a car owning. We all aspire to own cars.
Yeah.
I'm going to adopt a wait and see. And maybe it changes our minds. Maybe it changes our mindset.
Yeah, well, good on Mini. You know what? There are too few companies in South Africa willing to take these kinds of risks. So, you know, well done, Mini. It's a good test to see whether this is going to work, and they're approaching it in the right way. They're testing it in a small confined circumstance and trying to prove out whether it's going to work or it's not going to work. Just because it doesn't work doesn't make it Mini's fault. It just the market just said it's not going to work. You know, if that's the case. But let's see what happens. But the next piece is close to my heart. Tesla is now the second most. Why are you sighing? I'm going to switch you off. Bye. Tesla is now officially the second most valuable car maker in the world, only second to Toyota. The most valuable car maker in America, and it has surpassed both Ford and General Motors added together. Most valuable car maker in America's history for the last 100 years, more than 100 years, Tesla. More than naysayers now.
Okay, so I'm going to put Tesla in the same bracket as Apple. Now, I'm one of those guys. Years ago, I detested Apples. I detested their product and the fact that everything was... If you buy one of those things, you have to use everything else that they sell because...
Well, they're a closed ecosystem that works.
Exactly. So I was Windows... You know, the computer has to be Windows. And I used Android. That was it. And then I started working for Auto Trader.
Look at the reasons you did it.
Yeah. Now, then I started working at Auto Trader, and because we're an Apple-based company, cell phone, laptop, everything's Apple. Eventually, you start using it, and you realize, holy crap, this is actually better. I understand the hype.
Yeah.
It is actually better than the other stuff. But once again,
you got
to
use it.
You have to use all of the stuff that comes with it.
But it says the same thing, though.
Tesla is exactly the same thing. The amount of research, the R&D that they put into the drive systems on the cars, the battery technology, the recharging technology, it's insane. And you can sort of understand they were the disruptor 10 years ago, and they are now everybody, and I mean everybody worldwide is playing catch up.
Well, I mean, I keep seeing these memes.
Everybody laughed at them, and now they're sitting going, well, chaps, it's time to play catch up.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's why I can understand. I still don't have a lot of love for the Tesla because I've never driven one. So I can't say it's bad or not.
Go climb in it. It's beautiful. It's like when you experience
that. When you look at the technology and what they're putting back into the market, and when you understand that they are the market leader and everybody else is now playing catch up, and you can see it. Every year there's more and more manufacturers that are putting out electric cars, but they're still so far behind. I think Tesla's only downfall. They can't keep up with demand.
Well,
they can't make enough.
That
cars.
Will change. That will change. But let's have a look at their value. They're now worth over $100 billion. Market capitalization over $100 billion. Third place is VW now at $99 billion. Tesla's share price shot up to $650 per share. I mean, Apple's is only in the 300s, eh? $650 per share. Hopefully, it can stay there. The market-based cap of Toyota is $233 billion. So Tesla has to double in value, more than double in value, 2.3 times as a matter of fact, in order to reach Toyota's market capitalization. But if they beat Toyota's market cap, That would be an amazing feat. But what is the reason? What are some of the underlying reasons Tesla is getting to where they're getting to? What is some of the underlying reasons they're accelerating, and the other car manufacturers are becoming dinosaurs? And I saw a lot of memes. Mm-hmm. And one of the main reasons is their battery tech. It's a simple principle. They decided to use lithium ion battery cells in the floor of the car. And years ago, everyone else said to them, that's crazy. Why do you use consumer electronic batteries in your cars? You can't use consumer electronics batteries in your cars. And all the other manufacturers started doing what? Started making pouch-based lithium-ion batteries. Mm. Very, very expensive to manufacture a pouch-based lithium-ion battery. And that's, I think, one of the reasons they're ahead is their battery technology is just simple. It doesn't try and reinvent what a battery is. They realize that consumer electronics batteries, they can get their hands on them through Panasonic in the form that's already been proven, rather than trying to remake this battery in pouch form. So that's one of the major reasons that that they're ahead. I mean, the electric motor is an electric motor, but their battery tech is where the magic lies.
And if you, I mean, I followed over the December holidays into January, all the rumblings within the industry about where battery tech is going, and Tesla are on the. They're on the tip of the spear.
Exactly.
They have come out and said, we have a new battery that is about 7.5 times better than the ones that we currently have. We're just running through viability to see if we can manufacture this in scale.
Yeah.
And I think at this point in time, the only reason why Tesla isn't the number one is because, like I said, they just can't make enough cars. I think I read an article the other day about the fact that it's going to take them like 7 years to fill all the Cybertruck orders. That's how far behind they are. They can't build cars fast enough for people.
Okay, so let's look at price. Let's look at the price of a Tesla versus the price of everyone else. The Tesla Model 3 comes in at about $35,000 for a baseline Tesla Model 3. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Nobody can beat that price point.
Yeah.
No one. Why? Because the battery technology in those other cars are just too expensive to meet the price point of $35,000. So guess what the other car manufacturers might have to do? They might have to operate at a loss.
And buy batteries
from
Tesla.
Or buy batteries. Or buy batteries from Tesla.
Exactly. Yeah. But then they've got to remanufacture the form factor. They've got to redesign the form factor in the car. So is the future of the car industry and who the leader is changing?
Yes.
From one simple fact, and that is the decision on using a consumer electronics batteries inside that Tesla, and if the other manufacturers have to change the form factor and start to use consumer electronic batteries, that's going to put them even further behind. So now they've got a waning ICE vehicle business, and based on battery technology that is not as efficient and as cheap as Tesla's is. You go and look at any other electric car, you can't get to $35,000.
Except the VW ID3, which is going to be about
$33,000.
What makes you think that VW isn't running at a loss just to get, it's a lost leader, get it into the market, get everybody behind the wheel of one. It's costing them money.
It's costing them more than that. Mm. Yes, it must be. It must be costing them more than that.
Or they're pulling financing from other departments.
Well, to be fair,
they're subsidized by the government, right? The German government. Yeah. So that helps.
To be fair, Tesla's retail prices are also largely influenced by government rebates.
Mm. Same as VW.
Same as VW.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. You know, you look at the world in terms of what Tesla's actually done, and you start to realize that their investment in whether it was by fluke or not, who knows? But it's starting to win for them. It's starting to make them now the second most valuable car company in the world. Hopefully, it's sustainable. You know, old South African boy Elon Musk.
Well, if they can tweet him again. If they can get their production up and start delivering cars, and that their waiting list isn't 3 years long, hell, I think then everybody's going to be worried.
Well, demand is a good thing, right?
Oh yeah,
demand's a good thing, especially if the price point's low.
Want them here in South Africa, and they refuse.
You know, the thing about the Tesla, it's like the iPhone. You just don't know until you're in it.
Yeah,
you just don't know. You just go climbing one, and then you realize,
and then you become an advocate, and everybody's like,
"You know that Tesla doesn't."
Who invited him to the party?
Tesla doesn't spend a cent on marketing, and let's not make the whole show about Tesla. So I'm going to move on in a second. But Tesla doesn't spend a cent on marketing.
No, I can believe that.
So anyway, let's move swiftly along, and let's get into our auto talk segment. Let's talk autos. And who's taking this one on, Martin or Lawrence?
Okay, well, let's just start. 2019 in review. I had a long, hard think about this one. What was my favorite car from last year? My favorite car that I drove, that I went on launch, that I had on test, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And I had to really think, because there were some really, really good cars that came out last year.
Yeah.
But I had a long, hard think about it, and my personal favorite, my favorite vehicle from last year that I drove on launch,
that you'd buy test, as well,
that I would actually spend my own money on,
yeah,
was the Ford Everest Limited Edition.
Really?
I drove.
You should see Martin's van.
I drove the car through Botswana.
Yeah.
I did a 5-day trip through Botswana with the car, and I was. The week prior to that, I'd been in the Raptor. That was the Raptor that I took down to Durban. And I walked away from the Raptor feeling very, very disappointed. I expected a lot more. And then I drove the Everest Limited, and it was a completely different car, even though the fact that it has the same engine, same gearbox, same everything, it's just a completely different car. And that was my... I got out of the car on the Friday and said, can I afford to buy this vehicle? Because I want one of these in my driver. I can see myself. This is my family car.
Did you review the I-Pace?
No.
Chad
reviewed the I-Pace.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Because the I-Pace was another one that we reviewed last year. So, you know, I haven't.
I drove it, but I walked away from it and I went.
Not the forest. Not
for this kind of money, you know.
Yeah.
The I-Pace is just, it's really nice.
Money aside.
It's really nice, but.
Would the I-Pace trump the Everest?
No.
No?
No.
Interesting. What do you think, Martin?
My favorite. Take a guess, Lawrence.
Was it a Subaru?
No.
3 Series.
Was it a Suzuki Swift?
No.
I have no idea.
Okay. Toyota Supra.
It must be a Land Rover.
Well, yes. Okay.
Toyota Supra. No.
No. Look, the Supra was good. The Supra was good, but I wouldn't want to live with that car.
I wouldn't want to live with it either. But it's so good to drive that I can forgive it for all its numerous other failings.
So yes, the Supra is a solid second place. The car that I would want to live with is
that was my car of the year. And in runner up, I'd say that was a toss up between the Merc AMG E53.
Yeah, pretty good.
Well, see, I mean, in your list is all the performance vehicles.
I listed performance vehicles at the end.
Yes, no, I get it. The categories. But what's interesting is Lawrence's favorites are of the SUV off road type nature. Your favorites are of the sporty kind of
So that just shows how family life can ruin someone.
No, don't get me wrong. Look, I like performance cars. But once again, would you want to drive it every single day? And that is where, that's why I said the Everest probably is the one. It has all of the tech. It's superbly comfortable. It has just the right amount of power. It just has, like I said, it's the Goldilocks car.
I'm not going to deny the Everest is a great vehicle.
Yeah.
So if you had to choose an SUV, which one would it be?
A Pajero Sport.
A Pajero.
And it's not a bad choice.
Of 2019 we're talking, right?
Yeah.
I just
wouldn't,
because you'd have people constantly reminding you of what Pajero means in Spanish.
What does it mean?
I cannot repeat that. This is a family show.
Cannot be repeated on radio.
What about the Renault Kwid? I mean, it's one of the top-selling cars in the country.
I'm driving one at the moment, and it is absolutely despicable, horrible, miserable, and disgusting.
Wow.
You got to give it to the Kwid, though.
They still managed to find people
Context
to buy them.
Context is everything, right?
Because Renault has aimed the car at a very, very specific group of people, which is young, professional, college-leaving women. This is their LSM that they gave us at the launch. This is who they're targeting the car at. And you can't blame them. The car sells in numbers because they of the package that they're offering. We didn't say it's a good car. We're just saying... Well, the price and what people need and the people that are buying the car, it walks off the showroom.
Today, in today's world, there's no such thing as a bad car. I think most cars are, you know, 10 times better than they were 15, 20 years ago. Maybe Martin's Land Rover in his garage is a different story. But
I'll give you the keys to this Squid and have you drive it, George, and then see what you say afterwards.
Okay.
Here's the problem. This specific Squid costs about 170,000 Rand.
Yeah.
And it makes me long for the little Hyundai Atos I had on test a week ago.
Yeah. Mm.
It makes me miss that Atos because that was, in all respects, a much, much better car.
Hmm.
So, there's the problem.
So very quickly, I was asked this morning by somebody on leaving my home. I had a meeting with somebody at 8 o'clock, a very, very short one. And he said to me, "Oh, what kind of car should I buy? You're in the car game." I said to him, "You're asking the wrong person. I don't drive them for a living, but I'll give you my perspective. Like, you know, what are you looking for?" So he told me it was a Fiat that he was considering. He was a Fiat. So I had a look on Auto Trader, and the lights just went out.
Panic at the disco.
got very romantic here for a second.
Load shedding.
No, it's back on. So I said to him, I said, look at it practically. Don't look at it in terms of good car, bad car, good fuel consumption, bad fuel consumption. By and large, I'm not sure that there's a car out there that is a dog. I think most of them are okay. You know, 20 years ago, you know, you might have bought a lemon out the box, but not now. Now, most manufacturers have, and I say most because there might be the one or two that you know, you buy the lemon and it stops 10Ks on. But most of them are good. I said to him, look at it in terms of the context of the market that we operate in or that we live in. If you have to wait for parts, if something happens to that car, whether it be under warranty or not, doesn't matter. If you have to wait for parts, consider that in your purchasing decision.
Mm.
Rather, look at it from a volume perspective. The best kinds of cars to buy in South Africa, hands down, are the ones that are assembled here. Those are the best kinds of cars to buy.
Definitely.
Why? Because you're going to get parts, you're going to get service, you're going to get all those things
mm-hmm.
that you might have to wait for. I'm not saying you don't get it, but you might have to wait for if you decide to buy an imported car.
And pay more.
And you potentially pay more. So that was my advice to him. I looked on Auto Trader, and there were like 74 of these things, and very low volume. And then we had a look at the Hyundai i20. Now the Hyundai i20 is not locally manufactured either, is it?
No.
So,
but
there are large volumes of those cars. So therefore, you kind of miss that bullet of parts and service because there's large volumes. So prize number one for me, if you're looking at a car in South Africa, is locally manufactured. You can't go wrong. Toyotas, BMWs, you know, there's a whole lot of them that are manufactured in South Africa. Second prize is an imported high volume car, one that's got lots on the road. Steer clear of the low volume cars, Jürgen. Unless you're really passionate about that brand, then go for it.
You see, here's the thing with high volume cars. Even if it's imported, because there are so many of them on the road, so many of them end up on the scrapyard as your car will start needing spare parts.
Exactly.
And there you can actually find parts.
Exactly.
And it also leads to stronger aftermarket support.
Yes.
Because someone will see a gap in the market and import grey import spare parts for these cars.
A lot more support when there's high volume.
Yeah.
So look for locally manufactured, high volume, and you can't go wrong. You just can't go wrong unless you buy. Just check out the history of the car. Anyway, next bit is Toyota launches a new Corolla Quest with a bigger engine.
Lawrence, it's actually not that bad. It's okay. Let me put it this way: I drove it last week, and it's a vast improvement.
Well, here's hoping we'll wait until it comes out on test. The Corolla Quest Ubermobile, as it's known locally, it's a bit of a snore fest.
Look,
let's hope that the new one
is still not going to set your hair on fire. It's still not going to set your hair on fire, but I mean the outgoing Corolla was always a good and competitive car.
Does this one have that free Wi-Fi in it?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
What do you mean free Wi-Fi?
You get a gig or something, huh? No.
Well,
there's a hotspot.
Toyota. Any Toyota car or Lexus car that you buy now comes with free Wi-Fi. It's a Wi-Fi hotspot.
All of them.
Mm. Yeah. Every
across the range.
Dates are not paid for, though. You pay for the data.
You pay for the data after...
No, there's a gig or something. Yeah. There's something.
A gig button. But the fact is, the car is... It's Wi-Fi capable. In a Corolla Quest...
This car's going to sell. I don't know.
Sell like hotcakes.
Oh, Toyota's sell always sell. Africa's crazy. Painted red with Toyota. Yeah.
Not only that. Look, Toyota has taken an interesting tack with this new Quest, which is, again, a new old Corolla. But they've taken an interesting approach with this thing. Upsized the engine from a 1.6 to 1.8. So there's a lot more torque available.
Yeah.
You can get it with a 6-speed manual or a CVT auto.
Yeah.
And the CVT is actually not unpleasant to use. It's not the enthusiast's choice, but it's not terrible to use. And then they have 3 different trim levels as well.
Why would they bring a manual car out still?
Because some of us still prefer it.
For Lawrence.
For what? What? You want to do leg press? I don't understand manual cars.
Manuals belong in sports cars. Otherwise, every other vehicle on the road should be an auto or a CVT.
Why do you need to prove how fast you can change gears?
That's for the enthusiasts and the enthusiasts only. To be perfectly honest, I like a manual box, but you know what? If I was given the choice, I would drive an auto every single
day.
Exactly.
If you drive around town, because I'm lazy. If you drive around town, an auto of some description is always the better choice.
Why don't we have cars that you have to climb out and put a big rod in the front and turn the starter motor? Same thing.
Look, too many broken arms.
There are reasons why I personally would prefer a manual car. Let's say, for instance, overtaking on the freeway or merging with the freeway. With a CVT, you'd have this thing going, and you're not actually really going forward.
Just like the Renault Koleos I've driven last
week. You know, that looked like the Joker in Batman.
Oh, thank you, George. It's a bit early for compliments, but I'll take it.
Okay, well, let's see if this Toyota Corolla Quest has the same popularity as the outgoing Toyota Corolla. Toyota Corollas are a popular car in Africa.
Yeah, you can get spares for them at the Spaza shop.
My only question here is, you can now get a Quest 1.8 exclusive, which is pretty much the highest outgoing Corolla trim level.
Is the hatch running the same engine or
no? No, the hatch is the hatch, and there's a new Corolla sedan coming out very soon as well.
Okay.
But they're basically splitting off the Corolla brand into subgroups. It's the hatch, it's the sedan, it's the Quest.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the top level Quest retails for 307,400 with a manual, or as George would take it, 318,000 rand with an auto. And that's
just ditch the freaking manual.
That's a lot less.
A lot of money, dude.
That's a lot less than the previous range stopping Corolla with the same spec.
Well,
used to cost.
I want to see how they sell.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah,
all three of you. Are you looking to buy a new car in the future? Another car?
Nope.
A new car, second-hand car, whatever.
Nope. Well, I have to buy a new car and soon.
What?
Sometime this year because the one that I have is starting to fall apart.
No, just park it like Martin did.
Well, it's currently parked in the basement at work.
Oh.
I can leave it there if you really want. The car has reached the mythical 250,000 mark. And
wouldn't happen with an electric
car. Does it cost you more to maintain than a new car's payment would?
Not yet, because I don't drive it as often, because I'm in test cars most of the time.
In that case, keep it.
Well, then keep it.
Yeah. The dependability is becoming an issue.
Okay.
So, yeah, look, it all depends. Who knows what happens during the course of 2020?
I'm not looking to buy a new car anytime soon. I'm just broke, so... And paying off my current one.
Oh, the broke one.
Yeah. So it's going to be a little wait. I'm waiting for EVs, just like you, George.
Ah, there we go.
I don't need to.
So, let's hypothetically say you could change your car this year, and you weren't broke, or you just had this bright spark idea. What would it be? What would you go for?
Exactly what I've got, just a new model. So it'll be the Hyundai Tucson Sport, the N.
Okay. The N series, the beautiful car.
Yeah. There are a couple of them floating around at the dealerships down there where I live, and I do drive past and sigh reluctantly to myself.
I'd go looking for a used 2018 model on the Civic Type R.
Oh, it's usually a sports car.
Sports car.
Yeah, sports car.
And then you'd end up hating life because you're...
Probably the same car I have now, just a new model. Or the new 1 Series. Starting to like it, actually.
The new 1 Series?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. If I had to change tomorrow... Jaguar I-Pace.
Of course, could guess that.
Jaguar I-Pace, definitely.
No, I can see you behind the wheel of one of those. Absolutely. Yeah.
Jaguar I-Pace.
Yep. No, so the picture works.
The picture works. Yeah. I can park next to your Land Rover.
No, don't. Don't even transfer a spanner from my Land Rover to something else, because I'm pretty sure it's contagious.
What's contagious?
My Land Rover. I'm pretty sure it's contagious. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Toyota that I had parked behind the Land Rover
actually
broke down while standing still. So that's got to tell me something. A Toyota doesn't break.
Started weeping oil.
Yeah. It literally did. I had to replace the crank seal this weekend. Bring it, keep it far away for your own good.
Yeah. Well, let's get into some industry talk, why don't we? And let's talk about the industry and the working parts of how our automotive industry gets to do what it does. And you know, the automotive industry in South Africa contributes 7% to our GDP, which is a massive chunk. 7% of our GDP, and that's down to car manufacturers. I suppose the first thing that I think is important in South Africa is we as consumers, and as maybe the industry knows more or sees this more, but it's a big frickin' deal. It's a big deal that we have car manufacturers in South Africa. A big deal. Mm. Or car assemblers, should I say. Car assemblers in South Africa. I mean, I came back from Mauritius in December. They don't have a automotive industry. They don't have one. Full stop. And how many countries can say they have an automotive industry like we do? That underpins our GDP more than we know. And and part of that GDP, or that 7% of GDP, and probably one of the central themes around our automotive industry is the route to market. And that route to market is car dealerships.
Mm.
And, you know, people hate car dealerships and some love car dealerships and, you know, the car dealers are dodgy and car dealers are this and car dealers are that. I don't think so, because if it wasn't for the car dealer, our industry wouldn't have a route to market. OEMs don't sell direct. Only OEM that sells direct is Tesla. So dealerships are important. I mean, what are your perceptions or perspectives on car dealers?
It really all depends on the very first time you have dealings with one. The very first time you ever go and buy a car. If your experience with the dealer was good, you're going to love car dealerships and you're going to love the journey of buying a car. If your first experience was bad, you got ripped off, you bought a lemon or was sold a lemon or whatever the case may be, you are going to end up hating car dealerships and hating the fact that you have to go and buy a new car. And you will find every avenue at your disposal to avoid having to walk into a dealership.
Mm. Why do you think this car dealership like perception is perceived to be bad?
I think there's a significant chunk of used car dealers specifically.
That are bad.
But I think they're a minority.
Very much the minority.
But one bad apple can spoil the entire tub.
So. I always say, if you've got a fish tank and you put a teaspoon of food colouring in there, that entire tank is tainted.
And I think that is largely the problem, isn't it? A lot of the good guys have been tarnished by the very, very few bad guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I can still remember years ago watching a Carte Blanche special where they went after secondhand car dealers, where the guys were putting sawdust in the gearboxes and mashed bananas to quiet the noise. And you're like, I don't want to be stuck with that. Yeah. So I'm going to avoid car dealership. Well, I'm going to be very, very, very skeptical when I walk into one. But over the last 6-7 years, all the dealings that I've had with dealers around the country, the guys that I've met, the dealerships I've walked into, the people that I've worked with, they're all really nice people. And their whole thing is, I want to get you into a car. I want to get you down the road, and I want you to come back in 2 years when it's time to replace your car.
Yeah.
I don't want to screw you over because I rely on you coming back after 2 years or a year to buy a new car.
Well, I mean, we've got to be honest. You know, the car dealership is not incentivized to do you in. They're not. They're not incentivized to do you in. It's a tough market for everybody. So the very small minority of dealers that are bad apples just give the entire industry a bad name. And I haven't, I mean, I try not to differentiate between dealerships, but the ones that I visit more regularly or more often than not, have a really good attitude towards the consumer. They're very consumer-centric.
Yeah.
And I'm yet to see someone whose intent it is to do a consumer in.
Yeah, like what I've seen is since the rise of like the used car market, it's a big difference for dealers now. It's not about selling a car, but rather making sure that if I sell you this car, you're going to come back and buy another one in the future.
Lifetime value of a customer.
Exactly.
That's the way dealerships are thinking about
stuff. I also want to say, you know, it's also the type of product that the dealership is selling. There are guys that have a slightly higher end used vehicle, and then there are the ones, there are dealerships out there that cater to the
bargain basement,
lower end of the market where you're can't finance the vehicle because it's older than 8 years.
Well, I wouldn't call that the lower end of the market. You're not talking about the low cost end of the market. You're talking about the older vehicles. Older vehicles.
And doesn't matter what I think where people are getting done in, where you're buying a car for cash, you pay 25,000 rand for the car, and the guy said, oh no, the thing's 100% footstoots, it's hundreds, you know, you could be fine for this car for the next 5, and you drive the thing and 3 weeks later the gearbox falls out the bottom of it. I think that's maybe where the possession of that all
it just taints it. Everything.
And I think that's the difference, maybe the differentiation to make is
yeah.
Be very, very wary about where you're buying and what you're buying, and know, educate yourself as a consumer. Don't walk in there story eyed wondering, so I'm gonna get
emotional purchase.
Be very educated about what you're buying, know what you're going in for, and that is going to make your car buying journey so much better and your relationship with the used car dealer that much better.
And here's a pro tip: don't buy the first car you look at.
Yeah, always
don't buy the first car. Yeah, shop around,
comparison shop.
Drive a whole bunch of them and decide which one you like best and which one feels the freshest for you.
Well, let's turn our attention to the car dealer for a second. If you are a car dealer and you're sitting out listening to this, your ability to influence the consumer, the car buying consumer that we're talking about, is becoming more and more difficult. It's a fact. It's just becoming more and more difficult, not because of an economy, et cetera. It's purely because of the internet. The internet makes the consumer much more anonymous than they ever were, and because of that internet, and particularly the speed of the internet that's increased. I mean, we're now sitting with going into the cusp of going into 5G, and that's going to increase the speed of the internet even more. How do you as a car dealership change the perception of the consumer around these issues if less and less of them are walking into the showroom floor? I mean, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, the average consumer used to visit 5 dealerships. Now the average consumer visits 2 dealerships. Yes, they're still comparison shop, as Martin says, but it's much more difficult to get your hands on that consumer now because they're a lot more anonymous on the internet. So if you're a car dealer, you've got to focus on changing the perception. How do you focus on changing the perception? You build a car dealership brand. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You build your car dealership brand and what it stands for on the internet. I don't think that world exists anymore where you can wait for the consumer to walk through your showroom floor before they get a sense of what your brand is. They're going to research you. 22% of consumers research you as a car dealership before they're going to come and visit you.
Now, if I may, George, where I stay, there are a lot of car dealers. A lot. I mean, there's an entire road in our neighborhood which is dedicated. It's just dealerships from 4.5 kilometers of dealerships all up and down.
Well, that's the traditional kind of go from dealership to dealership. That doesn't exist anymore, right?
Of that entire street of dealerships, I only recognize 3. And I'll tell you why.
It's a franchise?
No. Because of those 3, I get targeted advertising in my social media feed. Oh. I don't know how they've done it, but I'll be scrolling through Facebook and...
Hey, location.
Those guys are... They're like a block away from me. And it's not just one advertising of a car. It's, hey, this weekend we're having a Borough of Awesome Bride Day. Come down, bring the kids on the jumping course. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I remembered that. So guess who's probably going to get the next walk-in when it comes time for me to buy a car? I will be going there first to go and have a look because I sort of trust these guys a little bit more now because they seem to be a little bit more tech-savvy than
they're trying to influence you, right?
30 other guys on that same road.
So, but isn't this the case though? Is next time you're looking for that replacement car we spoke about just now, you're going to go onto Auto Trader, you're going to do the search on Auto Trader for that particular make, model, or variant. Once you've done that search, because you're not really going to just walk into one dealership and go buy a car. You're going to try and do some comparison shopping, and you're going to do that comparison shopping online and more than likely on a search engine like Auto Trader. Once you get your list of dealers or sellers on the front page, what's going to happen next? The guy you've seen in your Facebook feed
and the one that's closest to
me. And the one that's closest to your house is more than likely the one you're going to respond to.
Yeah, and I'm not going to phone him first.
Because they've built a brand in your mind. Yeah. Mm. That's what they've done.
I'm not going to phone him either. I'm just going to pitch up on a Saturday morning, walk in with my kids. Not let them run riot. But,
so yeah. as a car dealership, that's how classified advertising or marketplace advertising and branding yourself in the mind of the consumer all works together. Is next time you get seen on Auto Trader, Something's gonna happen in like in your head, Lawrence.
I'm not gonna name names, but I can tell you what those guys, they have a giant inflatable gorilla standing outside the front of the dealership.
They're good at branding themselves, exactly.
And they're sandwiched between a Ford dealership and
Ford's getting the traction there for their branding.
But yeah, it's that's like I said, that I think that is probably where the dealerships that aren't doing that are probably losing out. Mm. Is you really should be looking at some sort of e-commerce strategy, something where you are, you know, working with the Facebooks and the Googles to sort of target your. So yes, the guy's done a search for used car or anything. It tells Google da 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 da, and then you get your targeted advertising.
Well, it makes social media doesn't sell cars.
And just plant seeds.
It just plants seeds. Yeah. And I like that term, just planting seeds. It's brand yourself as a car dealership in as many ways as you can so that when the consumer sees your classified ad on a portal like Auto Trader,
it sparks.
That consumer's like, I trust that brand. I've seen them before. I'm going to go there. So, if you're a car dealer listening to this, you know, create a brand for yourself. And that takes us to a little bit of crazy talk.
Motorsports, woo!
and we haven't done crazy talk in a while, so I thought this was quite fun. And the first bit of crazy talk is, you know, if you need to pay LeBola,
where's this going?
if you really, really can't afford to pay LeBola, don't go and steal the livestock.
I saw a story very similar to this. A guy had like 15 sheep packed in his Toyota
29, Corolla. 29, to be honest. 29 sheep stolen. So this dude, he goes out and, I don't know whether he wanted to pay LeBola or not, but he goes out and steals 29 sheep off a livestock farm. He puts it into two vehicles. One light commercial van, and the other was a VW Polo sedan.
Jeez,
the guy had, I think it was an old Toyota Taz, and he had like 15 sheep stuck in the car. It looked like a
in the boot.
So this is the thing. Clearly, people.
People you know, seem to be like,
I can't get hold of a truck, so...
Well, it's not a local thing only. I've actually seen photos of Polish Lada's in Eastern Europe somewhere with a couple of cows in them.
Oh, jeez.
In a Lada.
So anyway, this happened in Stilfontein. The stock theft has resulted in two people being arrested on Wednesday, January the 30th. But these poor sheep, I'm like looking at these photographs and I'm like, they seem quite comfortable.
Yeah, they look pretty chilled and calm.
Chilled inside the back of this polo.
But you know what cracks me up about this story? The headline. What are the strangest things you've seen people transport in their cars? Also, what would you use to get bad odors out of your vehicle? Because I'm pretty sure that Polo must have smelt like a high school locker room.
It smelt peachy, I tell you, after those sheep.
Yuck.
But 29 sheep inside a van and inside a VW.
You know what it reminds me of? Those stories about the UCT campus guys where they try and get as many students into a car.
Clown cars.
Yeah, Vitz University used to do it as well.
Yep.
And then they stopped doing it because somebody got hurt.
No. The guy at the bottom?
Yeah, you can put 32 students in a polo.
I mean,
who knew? How big
are these tomorrow? It was 25 or 28 or something.
What if somebody needs to pee or something?
Well, he's soaked. But anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, no, terrible. So, 10 crazy inventions that never made it to market.
Dashboard-mounted coffee maker?
Dashboard-mounted coffee. Yeah, it gets worse. It gets absolutely worse.
Plug for your hairdryer.
I've been driving
on the N1 in Cape Town. Yeah. I passed a woman in traffic who was blow-drying her hair while drinking a cup of coffee.
And, okay, so she couldn't do her makeup because she had...
I've driven past a guy reading the newspaper.
My goodness. Okay, well, here's an interesting, crazy thing that never got to market. And these are real. People applied for patents, etc. on this. And that was... the one thing's called a dog sack.
Yeah, shame. Poor
so if you have a look at this, we'll put this on social media. But if you have a look at this, dog rides comfortably in sack on the running board on the side of what looks like... one of those doors that open the other way, and there's a sack on the outside of the door. Just imagine this, like it looks like a handbag.
Yeah.
You put your dog in the sack, head facing forward, and the dog sits comfortably on the running board.
Yeah, that would probably not be so comfortable at 120.
Or safe. Or safe for the dog.
Or anyone else for that matter.
Bet you the dog enjoyed it.
Yep.
So the caption to this this particular invention was, when you take your dog along for a ride but prefer not having it inside the car like the sheep, it can ride safely and comfortably in the sack, which is carried on the running board. Well, I'm glad this didn't make it to market because, you know, it's a shame. The poor animal.
Yeah. Safe. I like how they put safe in there.
A toaster!
A microwave oven.
No, don't get ahead of me. The single glove to remember which side of the road to drive on.
Was it for America, by any chance?
No,
so somebody invented a glove, well, probably a set of gloves, and you only wore one, you're only supposed to wear one at a time, and you're supposed to wear it on the hand of the side of the road that you're supposed to drive on. So if you go to another country, like if we go to America, you drive on the right-hand side of the road, this glove was there to remind you which side of the road to drive on. Obviously,
oncoming traffic would do that.
This thing never flew. Mm. It was part of BBC TV's Dragon's Den. You know, have you seen this Dragon's Den? Some people get laughed out of that studio.
Yeah.
I reckon this might have been one of them. A glove to remind you which side of the car, which side of the road. And here's a stupid one. Also, never made it to market. A steering wheel tray for eating on the go.
Well, I mean, that will probably be useful.
I'm probably going to incriminate somebody here. I had a family member who used to drive long distance trucks for a living.
Uh-huh.
And he regaled me with a story of the one day where he was going over Solari's Pass making a peanut butter and jam sandwich on his steering wheel mounted breadboard.
Like that?
Yes. Making a sandwich while going over Solari's.
How do you even turn?
I don't know.
How do you turn?
So just for everybody that's listening, this particular breadboard or tray is attached to the bottom of your steering. So you've got a cutout and you attach it to the bottom of your steering wheel. Now, the only place that I could see putting anything on this steering on this tray is on a very long, very straight road, not going very fast. Other than that, I wouldn't recommend it on any road.
Well, I mean, that's probably useful for some... Let's stereotype for a little bit, yeah? Probably useful for some American on an interstate freeway.
What I don't know, like the crazy...
You know, she can put on her makeup and her coffee and everything all neatly on a little tray in front of her.
While driving.
Especially if it's a Tesla with autopilot.
That's true.
Well, I mean, if the car has to swerve, your sandwich is going to hit the other as soon as the car steering wheel turns, like, splat. Some people come up with the dumbest things. Anyway, an in-car record player. Somebody actually invented an in-car record player.
This is the early days of car audio.
Mm. Yeah.
I can understand this.
Not made to be used when the car's driving.
Because I'm pretty sure over any bump,
it's
going to scratch the record.
I think this is generally...
this is more plausible than the tray.
From the early days of car audio, where people, before the transistor radio was invented.
Or the CD.
Yeah, long before the CD. Yeah. Long before 8-tracks.
Who knows? I mean, vinyl popularity is coming back, so maybe...
Is that a new car? Because then it must belong to a hipster.
Old cars.
What is that, Lawrence?
Well, no, I don't know. This looks like a 1950s something.
Yeah, and it'd be an under dash, seven single.
Exactly. Yeah. Then a pedestrian collision detection system. Now, this isn't a pedestrian collision detection system to avoid the collision. This is to tell you what you hit.
Was this a bar with a spring on it?
I don't know, but this detector was supposed to tell you whether you hit another vehicle or an object or whether you hit a person.
One would think you would know.
Well, yes, exactly.
Well, yeah.
Well, obviously, this thing also never
makes a bit grim, actually.
Wait, how would this work? How does it know that you just hit like a human, for instance?
Oh, who knows? Never made it to market, but it was an idea.
Jeez.
Oh, and Volvo took it and ran with it, and that's why you now have the preemptive collision warning.
Well, that's a different story, right?
3 kilometers from the guy, this and the warning lights start flashing.
This is you're about to hit something, whereas this thing was you hit this.
This is what you hit.
This is what exactly. You hit a human.
Why am 10 I points. Getting visions of like a Wile E. Coyote cutout?
Exactly.
You hit a roadrunner.
And then this, I don't understand this one, because the amount of wattage that this thing would need, and you mentioned it earlier, Martin, was an in-car microwave oven. Like, I'm pretty sure the car can't even be able to...
No, you probably can if there's an inverter built into this thing.
Regulators and inverters built in.
Yeah, regulator and inverter, and your alternator is big enough, you can probably run it.
Yeah, you need some serious wiring to
run. Don't really understand why, though. I mean, do you really need your popcorn that badly?
Traveling to Cape Town.
Make a burger, popcorn, or...
Eat up some food.
Which brings us to the next one, which I actually really like. I think this is a brilliant idea.
Well, you go for it, burgers. You tell us about it.
As if that in-car microwave wasn't bizarre enough, this company decided that it was time to use the heat generated from exhaust fumes to cook burgers. They claim that the cooking compartment is completely separated from the main pipe, making the carcinogenic fumes on the other side of the burger safe.
But I'm very, very, very intrigued at the advert for this, which is, says, cooking while driving, save energy and time, no coal, wood, or other fuels needed in travel.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
This is something we used to do when I was a kid. My mom would
wrap
the butt course in tinfoil.
Wrap it in tinfoil and
put it on top of the engine. You drive from Colesburg to, you know...
Your bacon's done.
How do you know this is ready, though? Because it's in your exhaust, right? So how do you...
Because you'd be driving around smelling like McDonald's.
Probably the light that goes bing.
No, look, believe it or not, engine cooking is a big thing worldwide. And you can actually get engine cooking cookbooks in America.
Yeah,
but exhaust?
It's a cooking thing. And, I mean, this exhaust is provided it's properly sealed.
Yes, smoked exactly. Beef.
All right, and then let's move on to the next one. A car toilet seat.
I just thought about this morning because I needed to go to the bathroom. And I was like, I wonder if anybody's ever thought about this.
Yeah, clearly they have. Car toilet seat. But, like, the odor. The odor. I mean,
the briefcase toilet.
Like, I'm just going to the back seat to go and have it. And go and have a poop.
Well, you just know that meeting is going to be a crop of...
Exactly, car toilet seat. And then, you know, one that's probably plausible but a little bit dangerous is a nuclear-powered car. Ford actually made a prototype that wasn't nuclear-powered, but they made a prototype model of a nuclear-powered car.
Yeah, this never came to market. 50s. How cool is that thing styling?
Yeah, very nice. It looks good. It's almost like the Cybertruck on steroids.
This could come back. I think there's potential for this. Mm. Seriously.
And then very, very early on, the flying car. This thing's been going for decades and decades and decades, and nobody's ever got it right.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing, because if I look at how people struggle to control their cars on the road, I don't even want to know when you add complex aerodynamics and things to it.
Yeah, we're all going to die.
We're all going to die.
And, folks, that's a wrap. We will see you all in 2 weeks' time. From us at Auto Central, have yourself a good week. CliffCentral.com